This is something that I would normally show with the flood presentation. There hasn't been an opportunity to put it in. So just before I start this presentation, can you see what we've got here? We've got a block of ice. This is a glacier, which has gradually over the years been moving, and it's now melting. Can you see what is now starting to come out of the ice? This is a mammoth. This mammoth, you can see it's walking. This mammoth isn't lying down dead. This mammoth is walking. And it is completely encased in ice. That is an absolute mystery for the secular scientist. Now, if you read Another World, you'll come across mammoths like this and how they got into the ice. But this is something which, if you believe in the kind of thing we've been looking at, you can explain. The secular scientist cannot. This could only happen very quickly. This almost certainly happened in the flood as part of the huge, rapid, disastrous mechanism that caused the flood. And here we can see clear evidence. Things happen quickly. The uniformity principle is completely, utterly refuted. Well, science and education . The man who put forward the scientific method, the father of modern science, what's his name? Francis Bacon. He put it forward because he said nature carries the stamp of the creator himself, whereas our reasons carries the stamp of our own folly. So he brought forward the scientific method to keep our own folly in check and keep us constantly in touch with the Creator's real creation. And all the people who started science, Kepler, who said the privilege of a scientist is to think God's thoughts after him, Newton, who said the greatest value of his work is in showing the greatness of God, Faraday, James Clerk Maxwell, all men of science. And science was dominated by Christians until it was taken over by the secular humanists. Now that's true of education too. Education was a totally Christian dominated procedure. Until the same time that the secular humanists started taking over science, they also started taking over education. This is not just by chance. Satan moves among his servants, just as God moves among his church. But unfortunately, Satan has been finding plenty of very willing servants, and some very skillful ones, like this, for example, John Dewey. Now, much of the modern education system has its corruption to lay at the door of John Dewey. And he taught, among other things, that there are no absolute morals. What's good, what's right, depends on the situation. Situation ethics. And that has flooded the education system. Lots of his corrupt precepts have flooded the education system. Another man who worked with him, anyone recognize this? Julian Huxley, another arch atheist, another man who, like John Dewey, developed a humanist manifesto. He became the first director of UNESCO, the United Nations Educational Scientific and Cultural Organization. And it was his aim in his life to bring in secular humanism into every area of education, science, and culture. And he was very successful. Now, this man, Julian Huxley, was a typical atheist. And once he was challenged about Darwinism and was asked, why has everybody accepted Darwinism? And this was one of the things that he absolutely pushed. He pushed evolution into everywhere. And his answer to that question, why did everybody go after evolution? He said, we all jumped on the origin of species because the notion of God was a restriction on our sexual morals. Now, I'd like you to look carefully at this. He doesn't say the notion of God is a restriction to restrain the murderers, or it's a restriction to restrain the thieves. His objection, and the main objection of all the secular humanists, it's a restriction on sexual morals. And they hate it. Why? Because they want to live licentious, libertine lives. One of the people a little bit younger than them, but also a great mover and shaker in the world of philosophy and education, Bertrand Russell. He was known as a serial adulterer. He committed adultery one after another. And you see, they're all into sin, and they don't want to be confronted with it. And atheism is the way to go. If you love your sin, you are going to go for being an atheist. Because you know perfectly well that God is going to judge you if you carry on with your sin. So you've got to close your eyes to it. Now, if you look in the Humanist Manifesto, you'll find this. We believe that intolerant attitudes, often cultivated by orthodox religions and puritanical cultures, they are referring only to Christianity. It's only Christianity they hate. Unduly represses sexual conduct, the right to birth control, abortion, and divorce should be recognized. See, their whole program of infidelity and moral decay, well, it's going to lead to unwanted pregnancies, so you've got to have abortion. You know, messing about with all sorts of other women, your wife is going to give you a hard time, so you've got to have a divorce. You know, this should be accepted as normal. Has that happened? Yes. They have been very successful. They have introduced their ideas into the education system, and that has filtered down, and now everybody accepts it as normal. Now, the quote I gave you from Julian Huxley, he was loosely quoting a very famous statement made by his brother, Aldous Huxley. Now, Aldous Huxley, his full quote was this: the liberation we desired was simultaneously liberation from a certain political and economic system and liberation from a certain system of morality. We objected to the morality because it interfered with our sexual freedom. But you can see there are two things here that the atheists hate. They hate God's restrictions on our sexual morals. They also hate his restrictions on society and our economic system. God hates false weights and measures. God demands honesty. If you want to make a quick buck, if you want to indulge in dubious economic practices and corruption, things like this, you don't want to have anything to do with the God who says, you shall not accept a present, it blinds the eyes. Or you shall not use false weights and measures. So there are two things that you will find in common with all the atheists. They want sexual immorality, and they want a left-wing system. They're usually socialists or communists. Now, if we look at what Karl Marx had to say, Darwin's book is very important and serves me as a basis for the class struggle in history. The atheist has to adopt Darwin. You cannot believe in creation if you're an atheist. If you're an atheist, you have to believe in evolution. And as Richard Dawkins says, Darwin made it possible to be an intellectually fulfilled atheist. Darwin has to be your hero if you're an atheist. Writing to Friedrich Engels, he said, this is the book which contains the basis in natural science for our view. See, with that basis of evolution, you more or less end up with Marxism. It's the basis of it. And as Engels pointed out, in our evolutionary conception of the universe, there is absolutely no room for a creator or a ruler. And Joseph Stalin, a man very well qualified to make such a statement, said, evolution prepares for revolution and creates the ground for it. Well, anybody recognize this intellectual here? Anybody recognize the Minister of Higher Education, Blade Msimanzi? Leader of the Communist Party. Now, he's just a typical representative of the ANC, communist to the core. What do you think they are going to bring into the education system? What is essential for their atheist communist worldview in the education system? Evolution. And another thing that's pretty well essential, sex education. Now, when my daughter was 7 and my son was 8, they came to me and asked me where babies came from. So I went through the whole story very, very thoroughly, all the way through from puberty to menopause, everything. And then when I'd finished that, I went through all the Bible passages on marriage and on adultery and fornication and the duties of a wife to a husband to a wife, duties of children, showed them this is something which God has ordained for marriage and marriage only, and that took 1 hour. That was all anybody ever needs to know about sex education. Why is there all this ongoing program in the schools? There's only one reason. It is to indoctrinate the children with a perverse attitude to sex and encourage promiscuity, homosexuality, every kind of perversion. This is the kind of thing that is you expect from communists, from atheists. And this, of course, is what is now in our education since people like this came to power and came in control of our education system. The last thing you will find is the Bible playing an important influence in education anymore. They want to trample it underfoot. And the way that they see as a very good way of trampling underfoot is to indoctrinate children in evolution, because you can't believe in evolution and still be a Christian. It's just not possible. You can't believe the Bible if you believe evolution. Now, this is the kind of picture that you will find in at the beginning of the evolution story in textbooks. Now, this was actually a display in a museum. In Holland, they have set up an entire museum. It's called the Evolution Museum, to indoctrinate the children. And as you go in, there is a hall, and you can see a mock-up of the primordial ocean. And there you've got this water in the background, you've got the mountains, and there's this is supposed to be a volcano, and you have flashes of light representing lightning, and this is how life began, in an ocean of prebiotic soup. Well, this was maybe 15 years ago. And I looked at this and I said, this is known to be utter rubbish. So I went to the director of the museum and said, I've been looking at your display on the entrance hall. And he said, oh, yes. I said, you know perfectly well it's a lie. You know, all this has been so long ago disproved. How come you're still showing it? And he thought for a moment and he said, well, if we didn't show them this, what would we show them? He knew perfectly well it was not true. Now, around about at the same time, I had a friend who gave a lecture in Cape Town. And he was giving a lecture which included examples of fraud in theory of evolution, like the evolution of the horse. And it's been known for a long time that it's utter fraud. For example, Heribert Nielsen pointed out the construction of the family tree of the horse is put together from non-equivalent parts and cannot, therefore, be a continuous transformation series. It was removed from its prime display place in the Museum of Natural History in Chicago years ago and put in the basement because it was so embarrassing. Everybody knew it was a fraud. And at the end of his lecture, the director of the Cape Town Museum stood up. He was there at the lecture and he said, you haven't told us anything new. We've known for years the evolution of the horse was all wrong. So my friend said, well, why have you still got this display in your museum? Well, he didn't answer, but if he had answered, he would have said, well, if we don't show them this, what can we show them? All there is for them to show is lies. And this comes from a Standard 7 textbook. Now here you can see that it's been a test. In the textbook there is this test, and the pupil has obviously learnt it quite well. He got 8 out of 10 for it. This is 2010. Last year, this textbook. This is still being taught. It has been known for years. It is a fraud. It is not true. It's a lie. It is still being taught. Why? If they don't teach this, what have they got to teach? Now, in this same book, you can see it's a Graad 7 Sociale Wetenschap leergid. Standard 7, but it's just the same in the English ones as well. And if they do it in Zulu and Sotho as well, it's also the same. Now you can see here we've got evolution of the man, of man. What a nice story. And we start off with the skull there of Australopithecus. This is something to do with the evolution of man from the apes. Australo, southern, Pithecus, ape. Australopithecus, southern ape. It is an ape and nothing more. Charles Oxenard, an expert in multivariate analysis, analyzed Australopithecus and showed it is further away in its characteristics from man than is a chimpanzee. So it's got no place in the evolution of man from chimps. It's further away from man than chimps. So what's that here doing here in the story of evolution of man from the apes? Then down here, you'll see Neanderthal. Now, there are many Neanderthal skeletons which have been found. The original ones in the Neander Valley were people who had a very serious vitamin D deficiency, which causes a lot of bone problems, and they had very bent bones and they looked very strange people. But that was just because of a vitamin D deficiency. As you go to other places and find other Neanderthals, you find they are just perfectly normal people. The ones from the original cave just happened to have some bone problems. So Neanderthal has been established as just a normal man. But it's here as a sort of intermediate stage. Now, you may very well have heard stories about Neanderthal man, that it diverged from the lion to humans 650,000 years ago. Well, how did that story come about? It's worth looking at that to see how this works. One group of scientists wanted to find some DNA in a Neanderthal. And so they did some scrapings from the bone and they did some experiments and they said they had found DNA from Neanderthals, and their analysis of the DNA showed that Neanderthals diverged in the evolution from the apes 650,000 years ago. Now, that's interesting. Yesterday, we had a very brief look at how long does DNA last. Well, DNA decays very quickly if it is in contact with various things. It's very hard to say, you know, how long does DNA last? If there's water present, if there's enzymes present, it goes very quickly. If it's frozen, it lasts longer. And also, we've only been able to analyze DNA for about 10 or 20 years, so we don't really know in practice how long it can be made to last. But there is a technique where you take just DNA, you take it away from everything else, away from all the other chemicals, away from water, away from enzymes, and keep it in a freezer, and then you analyze. Then the only thing that breaks it down is this racemization, where the right-handed nucleotides gradually change spontaneously to left-hand ones. Just as in the proteins, left-handed amino acids occasionally just spontaneously change to right-handed ones. And it has been worked out that at the rate this racemization goes on, it would take 50,000 years before the DNA became unrecognizable. So that's in the absolute best laboratory conditions where you've isolated it, taken away from anything else. They think it could last 50,000 years. Now, in natural conditions, it obviously isn't going to work as long as that. That's why yesterday I said probably somewhere around 1,000 years. Well, that's just a guess. It's a sort of educated guess. Nobody knows. We haven't watched DNA for 1,000 years. But that, I think, is fairly reasonable. For that mammoth that we saw at the beginning, where the whole thing has been encased in ice right since it died, maybe it might last, say, 5,000 years. But it's not going to last 50,000 years like the pure stuff in the laboratory. Now, these people claim the DNA here shows that it's 650,000 years old. But even in the laboratory, it can only last 50,000. This was in a cave. You'd be lucky if it could last 1,000. How can it be 650,000 years old? It's obviously a fraud. So lots of other scientists have also tried to get DNA from Neanderthals, and they've all failed. They can't find any. So in every way, the position of Neanderthal man here on this story of the evolution of man from the apes, it's a fraud. Now, we've got here Pithecanthropus. Pithecus, ape. Anthropus, man. Ape, man. And you can see this is Pithecanthropus 4. Ape, man, 4. Well, what about the other ape men? Well, one of them was put together from what they said was a perfect ape man's skull cap. So it wasn't a skull like this, just the top of the skull. And they said this is a perfect ape man's skull cap. It was later found to be an elephant's kneecap. So we don't have a picture here of ape of Pithecanthropus 1. Then the next one wasn't a skull at all. There was no skull. There was a piece of bone which was said to be an ape man's collarbone. Wonderful. You can reconstruct a skull from a collarbone, can't you? Especially when it turned out to be part of a dolphin's rib. Now, you get the impression here when you look at this as if you've got a nice whole skull to examine. Well, Australopithecus, you do get whole skulls. They're common, and they're just apes. Neanderthals, you do get whole skulls. They're common, and they're just people. But ape men, you only find little bits. Now, here we've got a typical ape man skull. This has got more bone than most ape men. The bone is the dark part, and all the rest, the white, is plaster of Paris. And the reconstructor uses his imagination to decide how that skull must be. And you have a little bit of bone and a lot of plaster of Paris. Now, most ape men have far more plaster of Paris and much less bone than this. This, by the way, was a very famous ape man skull. Several hundred PhD theses were written and granted for theses showing the position of this skull in the evolution of man from the apes. Three scientists were knighted, largely for their work in showing the position of this skull in the evolution of man from the apes. It held the prime position in the British Museum for about 30 years, and it was eventually discovered that these bits of bone are not old. They had been chemically stained to make them look old, and this jawbone was actually the jawbone of an orangutan that had been broken so that the parts making it very clear it was from orangutan had been taken out. It was a pure forgery. Now this next one, Hesperopithecus, it's an impressive name, isn't it? It was more commonly known as Nebraska Man, was reconstructed from one tooth. Now it's not at all uncommon to reconstruct an ape man from one tooth. Have you heard of Alice of Alisdale? Reconstructed from one tooth. And Alice's brother, also reconstructed from one tooth. You can even see the tooth here in this reconstruction. This was reconstructed by America's most famous paleontologist at the time, Henry Fairfield Osborne. And it took its position on the family tree of man as Hesperopithecus until somebody found an identical tooth, which was still in the jaw of its original owner. Its original owner was a wild pig. So you don't find lovely skulls of ape men. They don't exist. You only find bits of bone and lots of plaster of Paris molded to make it look like an ape man. And Pithecanthropus IV is better known as Java Man. And here, in this same textbook, they have a whole piece on Java Man. Now, Java Man was discovered by Eugène Dubois. He went out specifically looking for an ape man to Java, and he found two human skulls and one giant gibbon skull quite close together, and about 20 meters away, he found a human leg bone. And he went back home and he said, well, this human leg bone and this gibbon skull are from one creature, and so he said, this is Java Man. And a reconstructor reconstructed it like this, convincing ape man, that is purely from a gibbon skull. This doesn't go down far enough. The big model in the museum shows it going down to the feet, because after all, it's got a human leg bone. Before he died, Dubois admitted it was a fraud. He had two human skulls from the same place the gibbon skull came. And he said, well, actually, it was just reconstructed from a normal giant gibbon skull. So the man who invented it admitted it's a fraud. But here in the textbooks, it's being put forward as a genuine transition from man from apes to man. Now, the next thing I'd like you to have a look at, also found in many textbooks, when I was a student at WITS studying biology, this was one full page of our textbook, and I've seen it in modern textbooks too. This is the most perfect proof you could ever want for evolution. Here we've got the stages of development of embryos. Here we've got a fish, salamander, a tortoise, a chicken, pig, cow, rabbit, human. And look, they all start off almost exactly the same. And as time goes by, they differentiate, and eventually they start to separate and become pigs and people. Isn't that wonderful? What better proof could you have for evolution? And do you know the story about human babies having gill slits? Look, here we are. You see these gill slits? Just the same as on fish. That's because we evolved from fishes. Well, those are drawings by a man called Ernst Haeckel. Here we can see photographs of the same embryos at the same stage. Now, does that look anything like as convincing as Haeckel's drawings? And if we put side by side the photographs and Haeckel's drawings, here we've got a fish, for example. Can you notice something funny about this? Doesn't look very much like that, does it? And you see here, do you see any gill slits? There are some there, but do you see any here, or here, or here? Do any of these really look like his drawings? It's a fraud. It's a forgery. So you would think this is now going to be taken out of the textbooks. But no. Do you know why? They say, no, it's not a fraud at all. You see, this illustrates evolution, and evolution is true. So how could it be a fraud if it illustrates something that's true? In this same textbook, you'll also find a similar kind of thing with drawings of man, gorilla, chimpanzee, orangutan, lamb, and a monkey. Now, look at this. Geez, a gorilla it's almost the same. Its legs are a bit shorter, its arms are a bit longer, but my, that's so like. And look at the chimpanzee. It's just so like a human being. This really is convincing proof. But why didn't they show photographs? There's a real gorilla. You know, gorillas can stand on their back legs, especially if you feed them every time they do. But they normally look and walk like this. Does that really look so convincingly like a human being? Does it really give you the same impression as this? And a chimpanzee, they also walk on four legs. You can train them to stand on two, especially if you throw them peanuts every time they stand up. They'll stand on their back legs all day if you continue throwing peanuts. But is this really convincing like that drawing? And our friend the orangutan, doesn't he just look so like a human being that you could think he was your grandfather? But this is not deception. This isn't fraud. It's illustrating evolution, which is true. Therefore, how can it be deception? Now, all this stuff that's being put over in the textbooks, in the universities, in the radios, it's all lies, and the evolutionists know it. Well, in Chicago a few years ago, I challenged a professional biologist from the University of Chicago, a man called Joel Duff, and said, why are you allowing all this lie, this nonsense to go ahead? Why aren't you objecting? Why aren't you telling the truth? He said, we cannot tell the public the truth about evolution. They would not understand and would be confused. Well, what is this truth that they can't tell the public because we might be confused? Well, Colin Paterson, senior paleontologist of the British Museum of Natural History, a man who's in charge of one of the biggest fossil collections in the world, he wrote a book just called Evolution. He asked this question at a number of meetings of top evolutionists all over the world. And at the Evolutionary Morphology Seminar at the University of Chicago, a group he called a very prestigious group of evolutionists, he got an answer. His question was, can you tell me anything you know about evolution? Any one thing that is true. And almost everywhere he got complete silence. Nobody could tell him anything they knew to be true. But at the University of Chicago, the Evolutionary Morphology Seminar, one person did eventually stand up and said, I do know one thing. It should not be taught in high school. It's even being taught in junior school. You can see why Soren Lovetrup said, I believe that one day the Darwinian myth will be ranked the greatest deceit in the history of science. Why are our children being taught lies, nonsense, foolishness? We all jumped on the origin of species because the notion of God was a restriction on our sexual morals. But you know, teaching evolution and believing atheism, or saying you believe atheism, doesn't help. Here we've got Bertrand Russell. When I was at school and university, he was the king of philosophy. He was the real champion of atheism before Anthony Flew took over his mantle. When he was old, he said, my innermost being is a constant ache. It is a pain that will not let me go. It doesn't work. Pretending that God does not exist won't get you anywhere, because he does, and your conscience knows it. We all jumped on the origin of species because the notion of God was a restriction on our sexual morals. You'll notice that to Satan and his servants, sex is important. Why? Because it's important to God. Right back in the beginning, male and female created he them, and God blessed them, and God said unto them, be fruitful and multiply. And Jesus, addressing this, said, but from the beginning of the creation, God made them male and female. For this cause shall a man leave his father and mother and cleave to his wife. This is what Jesus says. He's repeating what the Bible has shown all the way through. One man, one wife, for life. That is God's plan. Why? Because he sought a godly offspring, we read in Malachi. God wants godly children. There's only one way to get godly children. That's to do it God's way. If you are female, God's prime plan for your life is to be an excellent wife and mother. He may have other plans. Maybe he's got plans for you also to be a nurse or a teacher or a doctor or something else. But his prime plan for your life, his prime aim for you, is to be an excellent wife and mother. If you are male, God's prime aim for your life is to be an excellent husband and father. Everything in your life before your marriage should be geared to allowing you to reach God's plan and be the best husband and father it's possible to be the best wife and mother it's possible to be. What you study, what you read, the TV programs you look at, the internet sites that you surf, they should all be geared towards becoming what God wants you to be, an excellent father, an excellent husband, an excellent mother, an excellent wife. Marriage is honorable among all, but fornicators and adulterers God will judge. It doesn't say he may judge. He might. It's possible. Do you know why most of today's marriages are doomed before the man and the woman ever even meet? They've ruined it before they've met each other by not following God's laws. Fornicators will be, it will bring a curse upon your life, it will ruin your marriage. There's only one way to have the life God wanted for you, and that's to be pure. We can see the special chosen ones talked about in Revelation. These are they which were not defiled with women, for they are virgins. These are they which follow the Lamb whithersoever he goeth. These were redeemed from among men, being the first fruits unto God and to the Lamb. Who are they? The ones who controlled their body, the ones who controlled their lusts, the ones who were faithful to their marriage partner before they even met them. Is that what the Minister of Higher Education wants to cultivate? Does he want to cultivate godly people? People who believe the truth. Does our government want to fill the universities with professors who are going to teach you God's law? Or are they going to fill the universities with people who are going to teach evolution and immorality? You are going to have to contend with professors, with teachers, with friends, with colleagues who have been primed with everything Satan can prime them with to drag you down. How can you survive? You will only survive if you put on the whole armor of God, that ye may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. He wants you. You've got a choice. Are you going to follow this or follow the easy way and be led astray? Oh yes, this is another thing you'll hear. You'll hear that the genes of a chimpanzee are 97% identical to human genes. Now isn't that amazing? Because the number of nucleotides in a chimpanzee's gene, the genome, and the number of nucleotides in a human genome, they differ by 10%. So if they differ in number by 10%, how can the total difference in the genome be only 3%? You know, this is the first thing I told you about when you get to atheists, you're going to be confronted with, the first thing I said was half-truths. Now you see, let me put you in touch with the half-truth. There are certain proteins which are common among all mammals. They're so basic to the functioning of all mammalian body that all mammals have them. And one of these, a popular one, is called cytochrome C. It's just one protein. And the sequences of cytochrome C are very similar in all mammals. And between chimpanzees and man, there's only a 3% difference. That's for one protein. But they'll say there's only 3% difference between the genetic material of man and chimpanzees, full stop. If they'd said there's only 3% difference in the genetic material of that particular protein, cytochrome C, between apes and men, that would be telling the truth. But they've missed out the vital part of the sentence. And by giving a half-truth, they've given a lie. You know, it's utterly impossible that if the number of nucleotides in the genome is 10% difference, they couldn't possibly be only 3% difference. Now, at one stage, when people started off doing this comparisons of the various genomes, they took a protein, I can't remember what it was, but it's common throughout lots of different kinds of creatures. And they found that the difference between man and chimpanzees was, I think, 84%. So they were very happy with this. You know, 84%, it's pretty close. But then they discovered that a sea squirt, which is a very strange little creature, it starts off swimming around like a tadpole, and then when it's mature, it goes to the bottom of the sea and anchors itself and becomes like a sea anemone. It just stays there, squirting water in and out, filtering out food. And its DNA sequence for the same protein was 98% the same as humans. Oh, this is a big embarrassment. A sea squirt, closer to human beings than a chimpanzee. So they had to start changing the story and look for something where chimpanzees were close to human beings. But you have to beware of their half-truths. Their half-truths are just plain lies. They don't even have the same number of chromosomes. They don't have the same number of nucleotides. This whole story is nonsense.